Next on NPR's From the Top.
Aggie looks puzzled, attentive. Keep going, Ophelia.
She's rising. Wow. Fantastic, you guys.
It's the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. And today, from Chandler Music Hall in Randolph, Vermont, our lineup of outstanding young musicians includes a teenage violinist from nearby Woodstock performing the music of Fritz Kreisler, and, as you just heard, Will Top Letterman's Kid Scientist segment when we levitate a cow using Franz Liszt. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Here's our host, renowned concert pianist Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks for that wonderful welcome, and welcome to you all. Ah, Vermont, the state with the best PR in the nation, I think. When the rest of the country thinks about Vermont, they think about clean air, brilliant autumn colors, women in sensible shoes. Organic farms, friendly curmudgeons, skiing, Ben and Jerry's. I mean, the only thing I can think of that's bad about Vermont is no oceanfront property. But that's what the lakes are for, right? Okay. You can add now great teen classical musicians to the list of great things about Vermont. And we're going to meet one of them right now. Please welcome, from Charlotte, Vermont, 17-year-old horn player, Catherine Jordan. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you.
May I call you Katie? I know you go
may.
By Katie. Katie, you live in a very pretty and quite rural Vermont town, I guess?
Yeah, it's about 30 minutes south of Burlington.
So it does live up to the PR campaign? I mean, you've got some curmudgeonly but friendly people in town?
Oh, yes, definitely.
And, well, I hope your whole town is listening now. What are you and I going to play for them?
We are going to perform Richard Strauss's Horn Concerto No. 1, Movement 1.
When you're all set, we'll take it from the top.
Thank you.
Catherine Jordan, 17-year-old French hornist from here in Vermont, from the town of Charlotte. That was just fantastic. That was just so beautiful, the way you play that. Enjoy doing that so much with you. Now, Katie, you're not a true Vermonter. I mean, you moved here from Florida. Clearly for the weather, right?
Yes.
But I think that your outsider's perspective gives you a true picture of what's great and maybe what's not so great about this place. First of all, teenage rural living. Any cow tipping in your past?
No, that's usually something we use as kind of an insult to the rival high school. You know, if you call someone a cow tipper, it's bad.
Okay. So no cow tipping yet, but cows. Well, and you live across the street from some cows, right?
I do live across the street from cows.
Total respect for the cows. Okay. No cow tipping yet, but cows and a really small school.
Yes.
How small, really?
Well, the high school and middle school are combined, equaling a total of 600 students.
But Katie, your middle school was a small Catholic school, I imagine.
Correct.
The nuns were really a source of entertainment at all times.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. But they did provide really wonderful teaching there.
They taught you some of those really old school methods, like what, for instance?
Like sentence diagramming.
Oh, this is going to make some of our more elderly members in the audience quite happy that a 17-year-old still knows how to diagram a sentence. Ms. Jordan, could I ask you to diagram a sentence now here on stage?
I would love to.
Really? We've got a blackboard right here, as a matter of fact. Try this one. The French horn employs the smallest mouthpiece of any brass instrument, which requires adopting a tight embouchure and results in the occasional annoying cracked note. You ready?
Sure. Okay, well, first, you start with the most important part of the sentence, the absolutely necessary part. Subject, French horn, verb, employs, direct object, mouthpiece. Then you fill in all the modifiers for each of those words. The for French horn, and the smallest, and the prepositional phrase underneath mouthpiece of instrument modifiers, any and brass. Underneath that, you put a double verb, requires and results in, connected with a dotted line, and each of their direct objects. Adopting, embouchure, modifiers, a, tight, and note for results in, the, occasional, cracked, and you tie it all together with a diagonal line dotting back to the original sentence.
That's really excellent work, Katie. I imagine
you
avoided raps on the knuckles with a ruler with that kind of stellar performance.
Yes, no. They didn't rap on knuckles.
No. Now, okay, the rural life, a good education, but there is something about Vermont that's a problem, particularly for a teenage girl. What would that be?
Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of places to shop. There, I can think of two relatively good-sized malls within an hour of my house. Mm-hmm. And all other shopping happens at outlets in New York.
Oh, I see. That's pretty sad, but we're going to ask you to come out again and revisit that very topic in just a moment. But first, again, the Strauss was fantastic. Great opener.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon. Thanks, Katie.
Thanks.
Katie Jordan, 17-year-old French hornist from Charlotte, Vermont.
Go to our website to see the sentence Katie diagrammed, as well as to learn more about her and the other kids on today's show. That's fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jackkentcookfoundation.org, and that's Cook with an E. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. We've got another kid from Vermont up next. Please welcome from Picture Perfect Woodstock, 18-year-old violinist Dorothea Talento. Pretty good. Dorothea goes by Thea. We might as well shorten Talento to just talent, right? I guess we can do that. Thea, why don't you tell everybody about this lovely, stately piece you and I are going to play together?
Yes, we are going to be playing the Tempo Diminuetto by Fritz Kreisler.
18-year-old violinist Dorothea Talento from nearby Woodstock, Vermont, playing music of Fritz Kreisler. I love that piece. You play it so well. Now, and you came to classical music from fiddling. You actually started playing fiddle music. When was that?
Well, my uncle is a professional musician. He's a fiddler and a guitar player, and he's a cowboy as well. And when I was about five, he gave me a little tiny violin and taught me a few tunes on it. So that's how I started.
And then nearby, your first teacher was also a fiddler and taught Suzuki, I guess, yes?
Yeah, his name is Will Wright. And he was based in Hanover, and I started taking lessons with him when I was about seven. And he taught fiddle, but also the Suzuki method, which is a classical method of teaching, and that's how I got into classical.
Yeah. The bowing sort of vocabulary that you get in fiddle playing, though, is so much fun, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've never played it. Do you ever go to the fiddle festivals growing
up? Yes. Yeah, I've been to about two or three fiddle festivals.
Was there a lot of kids your age at the festivals? Or?
Unfortunately not. I wish there were, but there weren't. There are a lot of older people.
What do you mean, like 20 and stuff? Or?
I guess you could say that.
Yeah, okay. Okay, listen, we've heard about Vermont from Katie. You have a next-door neighbor who's so Vermont, it's like he's from Central Casting. Describe him for us.
Yes, yes. He is a true Vermonter. He's got the Carhartt thing going. He's got the red flannel shirt. He has a big garden where he grows corn and tomatoes, cuts his own wood, taps his own trees.
Wow. Yeah. And I guess he's also a one-man almanac, too. Doesn't he predict the number of days in sub-zero weather you're going to have?
Yes. A lot of old-time Vermonters pride themselves with being able to predict the weather, especially in the cold winter months.
I'd say the cold is pretty easy to predict up here. Or does he feel it in his gums or anything like that? Or is it sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, so you've got very Vermonter neighbors, but okay, how about teen fun? Any cow tipping in your past?
A definite no.
Definite no. Okay. I'll leave the cow tipping alone. But you share Katie's frustration with the clothes shopping thing.
Oh, yes.
Not a big fashion scene here, is there? I mean, but do you consider yourself a real fashionista?
Yes. I would say that I'm a fashionista at heart. Yes.
Where's your favorite place to shop in the world?
In the world? I would have to say Paris, France.
So, yes, and you've actually been there. I mean, you know wherever you speak.
Yes, I have been there. I traveled there last year with my French class of seven people, and we traveled around France, and we went shopping in Paris.
Really?
Which was a lot of fun.
I bet. Did you actually buy anything? Did you bring anything back?
Yeah. Well, there was this one dress that I got. It's silver and very shiny, and... I decided to wear it to school one day, and I walked into a classroom, and the teacher looked at me and said, "What are you wearing?" And I said, "It's a dress." And he said, "Really?"
Were you picking up radio signals on the dress or something? Or?
Yes, it's the equivalent to a spacesuit.
Right.
Yes.
Should have said, it's not what am I wearing, it's who am I wearing.
Exactly. That's
the word. It does beg the question, what is fashion in Vermont?
Our next model is the beautiful Katie Jordan. She's in a classic, never-out-of-date look. A big old roomy sweater knitted with love by mom with wool from Aunt Jenny's alpaca herd. Worn under vintage Carhartt canvas overalls. On the feet, what else? Birkenstocks. And with this outfit, accessories do a lot of the talking. For Katie, it's that simple rubber band holding her ponytail that projects just the right I don't care attitude. And earrings made from Christmas lights that top it all off with that found object look that's all the rage this fall. This girl is ready for a night out in Burlington.
Very nice runway work there, Katie.
Thank you.
You obviously know who the next winner of Vermont's Next Top Model is going to be. So, Thea, Katie, is this pretty much Vermont fashion, would you say?
More or less.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're in Vermont. I mean, I'm not sure it would work to have an Armani exchange here, or, you know, I guess you're just going to have to plan road trips, you guys. Anyway,
Sounds great
seeing you and hearing you both. Thanks for being with us. Thanks a lot. Thea Talento, 18 years old, a violinist from Woodstock, Vermont, and thanks to our young French horn player, Katie Jordan, for modeling the Vermont look. Well, we've heard two very talented young musicians from picturesque Vermont. Now let's hear a very urban kid. Please welcome from the Bronx, 16-year-old clarinetist Christopher Pell. Chris, welcome. While I head Thank back you. Over to the piano, why don't you tell everybody what we're going to play together?
We will be playing the Grand Duo Concertante by Weber, and it is the Rondo movement, which is the third movement. Thank you.
The final movement of the Grand Duo Concertant by Karl Maria von Weber, played for us by 16-year-old clarinetist Christopher Pell, comes to us from the Bronx in New York. Just great playing that piece with you. It's a wonderful collaborative work.
Well, it was great working with you. Thank you for that.
I always love Weber, backstage, playing a concerto and hearing the orchestra play a Weber overture beforehand. It's like a football game or something. It's just a raw sort of feeling about the piece. It's hard to be depressed and play Weber.
It's very happy, even when it's sad. But it's so hard, though. The musical part of it is very hard.
It's a great challenge. Well, big success with that performance. But you had very, very early success with this instrument. Literally, the moment you picked it up. Tell us this story.
Well, when I was in fourth grade, the school that I was enrolled in had a lot of cliques. And I wasn't in any of them. And I was part of the loser crowd. And I still am, but so I decided that this instrument, since it's black and silver, would be appealing to all the kids in the cool group.
Absolutely.
So I thought I would pick it, and I tried playing it. I just played an open note, which is nothing at all. The teacher held it for me, and she just said, go like this and play. So yeah. I tried it, and she had everybody stop doing what they were doing, testing the instruments, and listen to me play that one note. So then she had everybody clap, and nobody knew what they were clapping for. So then after that point, they never let me try the violin or the cello. I really wanted to, but
I think the black and silver is a good look for you. I think it's a good one. And not only that, obviously you were able to play, having the right, lip, having the right embouchure for it. You said you played a long note. It didn't sound like a duck squawking. Obviously, it was a good fit.
Well, that's good. At least it didn't sound like an oboe.
God forbid.
I'm sorry.
Those double reed players are a little nuts, Chris, your first band teacher picked up on something that other teachers have nourished. You are now studying in the Juilliard pre-college program where you've had some pretty famous teachers. Tell us.
Well, when I first arrived in New York, which was 5 years ago, I wanted to study with John Manassi, but he was too busy at the time touring. So he referred me to his teacher, and who was David Weber. And I studied with him, and he was a grandfather to me. And even at the age of 92, he could hold out notes longer than I could. And it was great studying with him, because even though he wasn't as good as he was playing the clarinet, he was still a better teacher than
phenomenal teacher,
anybody
yeah.
else.
Yeah. And he didn't normally take young kids, I hear.
No,
this was a sort of a special circumstance.
And even when I went to him, I was playing a plastic reed, which is looked down on.
Sure.
It's just more like, for some people, it's more amateur. I'm not everybody, but he called up my teacher and said, he's playing a plastic reed, but he's not Irish. I don't know why I made him sound Irish to now. He's not. Sorry.
Everything sounds much more charming in an Irish accent.
But it was great studying with him.
Yeah.
No one else is like him.
So, Chris, it's time to talk about your grandmother. Why are we talking about your grandmother?
Well, she's wanted me on this show since I was born. I remember when I was in my crib when I was very born. I was just out, and she was already looking at my fingers. Oh, you can play piano, Didn't say clarinet, but she wanted me on this show.
Really?
So the few times that I've been on the radio, I would call her and say, Grandma, I'm on the radio. Mm-hmm. Christopher, are you playing on this show with the interview? You? No, Grandma. Oh, I still love you. So that happened twice. Then finally I called her, about a month ago. She said, oh, Christopher, I love you so much. Just make sure you're funny. So I figure I needed to mention her on this show.
Well, absolutely. She's been waiting for this moment, so please give her a shout out.
Hello, Grandma.
Well, Grandma, your grandson done you proud. Really, really proud. Great
Thank
playing,
you.
Christopher. Great being
Thank
with you.
You too.
Christopher Pell, everybody, 16-year-old clarinetist from the Bronx, New York.
Welcome back to the Radio Showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week we're broadcasting from Chandler Music Hall in Randolph, Vermont. Coming up, Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2, played by a 16-year-old pianist from Pittsburgh. From the Tufts Homes, New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Today's program is made possible with support from Vermont Public Radio. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Before we hear the pyrotechnics of Franz Liszt, played by a young pianist who is totally up to the challenge, we're going to meet a piano trio from the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra's chamber music program. They are Kevin Hu, 14-year-old violinist, Mira Luxon, 17-year-old cellist, and Ophelia Hu, 17 years old, that's Kevin's sister, on piano. Please welcome the Cerberus Trio. Our young cellist, Mira, is at the microphone. Mira, would you explain, please, how you came up with the name of the group, Cerberus?
Yes. Well, it started a few years ago when we were just forming our group, and we were looking for a name, and you know, it's really hard to find a good name for a chamber group. So I was really into Harry Potter back then, and I came up with this really strange idea of calling ourselves Fluffy after the three-headed dog who gets put to sleep in the Harry Potter series. And, you know, it sounds really ridiculous, Fluffy. So my sister suggested that we call ourselves Cerberus, which is basically the ancient Greek equivalent of the same character. And we stuck with it because it's just so much classier.
So it's more ferocious, too. I like that.
Yes.
Fluffy doesn't. Well, so what is your fierce monster of a group going to play for us?
We are playing the third movement of Smetana's Piano Trio in G minor, Opus 15.
Thank you.
the Cerberus Trio from Chicago, Kevin Hu, 14-year-old violinist, Mira Luxon, 17-year-old cellist, and Ophelia Hu, 17-year-old pianist, playing Smetana. That was an extraordinary performance, and for our listeners at home, we should note that you guys memorized that piece, no music in front of you. That's wonderful. I wanted to ask, Mira, did you decide that you wanted to memorize it, or was it just a question of like, hey, we've been playing this a long time, you know, what was the deal?
Well, you know, it naturally happens. If you play a piece for a long time, you do end up memorizing it. But it was a decision that we made because we really wanted to be able to communicate with each other better. And when you don't have that music stand that you're staring at all the time, you know, you get to just see each other in a totally different way. And also sit closer to each other and just listen better and communicate better.
Are there any downsides to memorizing a piece?
Well, I would say the only danger is, you know, if somebody makes a slip, then you're completely lost.
Well, but you've got company.
Oh, that's for sure, yes.
That's a good thing. So you can see each other eye to eye, but literally and figuratively are two different things. I guess, Kevin, are there disagreements about how to play this particular piece?
Yes, there are. There's... There's one particular spot that while we were working with a coach, we started a disagreement on. Mm-hmm. And Ophelia and I are siblings, so we can have our little arguments. Uh-huh. And I guess Ophelia can explain her viewpoint.
Well, my viewpoint is there's a section of our piece in which we want to play rubato, which means take your time, play it nice and jazzy.
It starts out with a cello solo. Is that the place you're talking about? That mm-hmm. sort of
Yeah, with cello yeah. solo, uh-huh. and I'm just accompanying her. I'm taking mm-hmm. my lovely time.
Yeah.
But you're taking around 50 measures of it.
Oh. I think a little bit of time in the spotlight. It's a beautiful accompaniment, by the way. I mean, it is sort of jazzy, as you mentioned.
So.
It's sort of free floating, and Mira makes it very comfortable for you to play. Yes.
Yes, I love the way.
All right, back off, Kevin. No, but see. Meanwhile, I mean, Ophelia, what's it like in general playing chamber music with a little brother?
I mean, we don't always disagree.
Yeah.
It's definitely a very interesting experience.
Thanks.
It definitely has its ups and downs. Well, being able to play with Kevin, I get to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and play with somebody in my pajamas, which Mira's not there for, but I mean, Kevin, beyond being a great sibling, is also a really great musician to work with.
So you mean you guys actually really do get along, I mean, in general?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Kevin, does this surprise friends of yours?
I remember one time, Philly and I go to the same high school. One of our friends, I'd have to say, came up to me and was like, hey, why are you so close with your sister? And I'm thinking, why can't I be?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Does he do sweet things for you, Ophelia? Is it nice
Tons.
To have him around?
Really? 14 years of them. Oh. Well, I mean, Kevin's the kind of kid who would, this has happened many times, he would put chocolate in his pocket to make sure that he gave it to me when he came home.
Oh.
And then he'd take it out and find that it all melted in a big mess.
That's right. M&M's, Kevin. Okay, try M&M's.
I'm fine.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Kevin who? I saw you on Letterman. Did
Maybe.
I not see you on Letterman?
You might have.
What were you doing? What were you doing on Letterman?
A couple of friends and I, well, acquaintances, I guess, we went to New York City for the Kid Scientists segment of David Letterman's Late Show, and we performed science experiments there.
So what kind of experiments did you do?
I demonstrated, among other things, how to TP your neighbor's yard. In other words, the Bernoulli principle with a leaf blower and toilet paper.
Oh, I
and,
see.
also, I demonstrated Pascal's law with a bottle and a hammer.
Ah, so what happens with that? What's the principle there, Pascal's
law? All right, I'm going to try to remember this. Pascal's law states that when a pressure is applied to a liquid, it is transmitted undiminished in all directions.
And so what happens when you hit this?
When you hit the top of the bottle, which is corked, the bottom of the bottle falls out.
And how did that work out on live TV? Pretty well?
We accidentally got a cut of Letterman's shoes getting soaked.
Oh. Nice guest, Kevin. Really
yeah.
nice. Well, those are kind of cute experiments for television, but Kevin, on radio, we can do much, much cooler stuff. Mm-hmm. Experiments that Letterman can only dream about. And to help us prove the point, everybody please welcome 16-year-old roving reporter Emily Mayer.
Thanks, everybody.
Kevin and I have worked up a demonstration of something from physics called the De Angelis Principle. Kevin, tell everybody what that is.
It states that a vessel, when filled with carbonated liquid, warmed, and subject to the music of Liszt, will rise.
Exactly. And when you say rise, you mean rise, as in levitate.
That's right.
Ophelia, would you please help us out with the Liszt?
Anything in the name of science.
So, Kevin, what's our vessel today?
Well, seeing as how we're in Vermont, it's a cow.
Right. A perfect Holstein named Aggie. Hi, Aggie. Aggie's been hoisted up and is standing on top of the piano. Kevin, what's our carbonated liquid today?
Well, again sticking with Vermont, it's an espresso soda invented in Woodstock called Java Pop.
We're not making this up. It was invented in Thea's hometown. Okay, Kevin, see if you can get Aggie to lap up a bowl of Java Pop. Wow, she really loves that stuff.
Maybe it's a secret to Vermont cheddar.
I doubt it. All right, now, as the Java Pop is warming in one of Aggie's seven stomachs, Ophelia, some Liszt, please. Aggie looks puzzled, attentive. Keep going, Ophelia.
She's rising.
That's it. The De Angelis Principle at work.
Wow. Fantastic, you guys. I'd never heard of that before. But will Aggie ever come down?
As soon as Ophelia stops playing...
Take that, Letterman. Wow, that's fantastic. Kevin, wasn't that better than any old Letterman segment?
Definitely.
You guys, fantastic for playing along and playing this metna so beautifully. Fantastic. Bravo, you guys. Thanks for being here. Members of the Cerberus Trio, all from the Chicago area.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at npr.org/podcasts. Each year, From the Top and the Jack Hancock Foundation present 25 performers of exceptional musical ability, outstanding academic potential, and financial need with the $10,000 Jack Hancock Young Artist Award. Learn more at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Our last performer is one of those Jack Kent Cook young artists Joanne just mentioned. He's an exceptional 16-year-old pianist from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Alvin Zhu. Alvin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. As I understand it,
Alvin, you were born, quite literally, to play the piano. Tell everybody about your grandfather.
My grandfather, his name is Zhu Gongyi, and he is a very famous pianist in China. He was the head of the piano department in the Beijing Conservatory of Music. But due to the Cultural Revolution, he was forced to lock up the piano, and none of his four children could learn the piano. So when my parents came to America, they wanted to let my generation continue the legacy of my grandfather and what he's established in China. So
great thing that they did that. Your parents actually... And your grandfather is one reason you've had a couple of private lessons with the great young pianist Lang Lang.
Yes.
How did you meet Lang Lang? Where did you meet him?
When Lang Lang came to Pittsburgh for a concert with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, I attended and I talked to him backstage and we became acquainted through my grandfather's name.
Wow. So what tips did Lang Lang give you?
The best tip that he gave me was how I should play and how I should perform for audiences. He told me that I don't play like a student, nor should I act like one, I guess. I guess he means that I'm supposed to show the audience that I enjoy the music, and I do, of course, and I have to make the audience satisfied and entertained And I have to show that I'm not just up here because I have to, that I enjoy being up here. So.
Well, it's been great fun watching you play, and we're very, very much looking forward to
what you
brought us. What are you going to play for us now?
I will play the Hungarian Rhapsody number 2 by Franz Liszt.
Great. It's a very exciting way to end the program, and this time, Liszt without the cow. I want to thank all of our great young performers today, and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Alvin, you can take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. The music producer is Tom Vinieri, and the tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore, with lighting by Tori Sweetser. Our technical director is Barrett Ouellette, with Dan Hallis and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.